matter what people say. We got it going on. Who cares about what they think?
You know me, I'm the hottest in the
game. WJMS, this is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are staying safe in these quarantine streets. It's another day, another week of quarantine. And what kills me is that today is Easter. We are spending Easter Sunday indoors. Now, Easter is one of my favorite holidays. Christmas is number one because I love the family togetherness, the cheer, just the holiday season in general, days off from work. But second is Easter. Anybody who knows me knows that I also love to celebrate Easter, particularly with my godchildren. And this year we had a whole thing, you know, like a whole setup, you know, planned. I was going to go to Jersey, spend time with my godkids, and it was going to be, you know, perfect as we do every year. The Haitian food spread, like I was excited. And then the corona apocalypse hit us. But I know for many black people across the world, Easter is that one holiday where they stunt the hardest. And what I mean by stunting is the Easter outfits, right? The church hats are out of this world, never seen before, custom made. And this is the time where the men, you know, show up and show out in their powder pink suits, in their pastel purple suits. Like, this is the time where everybody comes out in. It's like we always hear the saying, you know, get dressed in your Sunday's finest. This is like the Sunday's finest on fleek. This is the Sunday's finest to the third or 10th power. I don't know. So I know that there are people who have had their Easter outfit, Easter 2020 outfit, you know, curated and planned since last Easter. So a part of me feels sad for those, you know, for those of us who were part of that, you know, Easter stunting culture. But what I've been seeing lately, though, I've seen a lot of people actually get dressed in their Easter outfits, you know, and then just take pictures on their front porch or in their apartment. So, I mean, you got to do what you got to do to stay sane in these streets. And, you know, for a lot of people in the black community, Easter is that holiday, like especially those Christians who only go to church Easter, Christmas, and I think New Year's Eve. This is a big deal. And so having to be inside is crazy. But there are a lot of church services being streamed online. Some people have been watching old, you know, sermons from the year before. I know that Brooklyn Tabernacle has had some, you know, things available for people to watch. And for those of us who are obsessed with the Sight and Sound, which is like, you know, the Christian plays that they do around the Easter season, a lot of us were supposed to go this year, but unfortunately, obviously, we can't go. TBN, I don't remember what it stands for, but the TBN app, if you put that in your app store, if you download it, you can actually stream the Sight and Sound play or performance for free for the Easter weekend only. So for those of you who were bummed that you were not able to get your Sight and Sound on this year, you can do so via the TBN app or just Google it and you'll be able to figure out how to get in touch with that. So, I mean, despite being inside, despite being quarantined, it is Easter. Jesus is the reason for the season. You know, he rose again on the third day. There's a lot to be thankful for, a lot to be grateful for, and we can still celebrate. You know, as Christians who take Easter very seriously, we can still, you know, fellowship and just continue to be, you know, in the spirit, even though we are not physically in the church place. And the one thing that I've, you know, heard a lot of preachers and a lot of people say is that, you know, we have to be reminded that, you know, there's a physical building that's the church, but then like the true church is the people, right? So we can still engage, still communicate, still FaceTime, still be in the spirit with one another, even though we're not physically in the building, we can still, you know, continue to do church, right? So hopefully that gives you some some sort of, I guess, happiness. I mean, by the time you guys hear this episode, we will be only hours away from the end of Easter. But, you know, until it's midnight, it's Easter. So do what you got to do. So Today, we have a very special guest. We are going to be speaking with a nurse on the front lines in these Brooklyn streets. So one of our frontline nurses who is every day fighting the good fight against COVID and treating our, you know, treating patients, treating our parents, treating our friends, treating us. And so she is going to come on and give us a little bit of the behind the scenes of what is actually going on in the field. We are watching social media, we're on the internet. Some of us have relatives and friends who are on the front lines. And so some, you know, we're able to get some understanding there. But I think it's really important to have somebody be very, very candid, who's detached from us in a sense, giving us the real behind the scenes as to what is going on, you know, on the front lines. And also to give us a glimpse of what is going on in the mind of a frontline nurse. I mean, we who are not in the medical field, we are non-medical professionals, where a lot of us are at home and we're scared to death. You know, we don't want to go outside. We don't want to step foot, you know, in our elevators. You know, we don't want to go to the grocery stores because we are so scared and we are so anxious about what's going on. But, you know, to be in a profession where you are essentially forced to be out and fighting this thing, you know, it's really interesting to see what the thought process is, what is going on through their minds. And so she is going to come on and she's going to talk about all of that. But before we get into the meat of the show, you know that we have some preliminaries. So let's get ready for our preliminaries. And it's now time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Hopping on fleek, is it lit?
And it's going to be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is 2020. That is the, I guess, the phrase of the week. I don't know. 2020 is the word of the week. And so Urban Dictionary defines 2020 as a huge mistake. That is the definition for 2020, a huge mistake. Example, friend, I hope my future is bright in 2020. Me, well, North Korea is going to make it brighter. I don't know. I feel like there should have been a little more to that statement. I don't know. I'm not really feeling the example. But outside of the example, I think we can all agree that when somebody says 2020, we automatically think huge mistake. This year has been nothing but trash. It's been trash from day one. And it's continue. I mean, I was just talking to my friend the other day about this. We are only in the month of April, people. We are only in the month of April, and we have felt as if we have gone through an entire 12-month period. I feel like we have gone through the 12 months already. Like, this has been the longest year possible, and it is only April. So, I mean, I'm only praying for courage and strength to get through the rest of the months, but it's only April, and this is how we're feeling. And if you ask me, Christmas is around the corner. Like, the days are going by fast, but I feel like we've been in the struggle for God knows how long. So 2020 is the Urban Dictionary word of the week. And I think that whoever created this or whoever submitted this definition is on point. It's a huge mistake. I mean, what more can you say? So we are now on to one of my favorite sections of this show. It is now time for our big up of the week.
Watch it.
You for big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up.
So this week's big up of the week actually goes to one of my dear friends, Diana S. You know, I don't want to give too much of the government name out here, but one of my girls, Diana S., she knows who she is. And the reason I wanted to big her up is because she is doing amazing things in the community with a group of her, you know, her friends and an organization. So basically, it's a grocery gift card fundraiser project, and it's to help the residents in the Bronx get their meals delivered as they deal with the impact of COVID-19. So the Bronx is the hungriest borough in NYC. 26% of Bronx residents are food insecure. We want to help. So to donate, you can go to gf.me/u/x as in xylophone, T as in Tom, 4, X as in xylophone, R as in Robert, S. So gf.me/u/xt4xrs. Or you can contact them at thebronxmutualaid@gmail.com, or you can call or text at 347-433-7575. And it looks like this is also being supported by the East Bronx Democrats and Bronx Community 6. Again, we are seeing a lot of outpour from those who have, you know, those who are able to assist those who cannot and those who have not. And I didn't know that the Bronx was the hungriest borough. I mean, we all know a lot of things about the Bronx. Most are not positive. And it's interesting because, you know, we do see a lot of outpour for Brooklyn. Obviously, Brooklyn is a very big borough. We see some outpour for Manhattan, but we don't always see the assistance rolling around for the Bronx. And so I think that it is commendable that a group of individuals are getting together, a group of young people are getting together to really spread the word on this grocery gift card fundraiser that they're trying to do. They've been successful in raising money already. They actually surpassed their goal about a week ago. And so they're continuing the fundraiser so that they can raise as much money as possible so that they could feed as many people as possible in the Bronx. So definitely check out this information. I am going to go ahead and post it on my Instagram page. If you don't know what my Instagram is, According to RP on Instagram. And if you have any further questions for me about it, because for whatever reason you didn't get the info, you can also send me an email at accordingtorp@gmail.com, and I can put you in contact with the individuals. Again, this is something that my friend Diana S. sent me. She is one of the coordinators, one of the organizers of this particular effort. And so I definitely wanted to shout out her, particularly because she's my very dear friend and lawyer colleague. But she is she and her group as a whole deserve, you know, a big up for the work that they are doing. So definitely let's see what we can do to assist Diana in her efforts to raise funds for the grocery gift card fundraiser. So with every high, you know that there is a low. And in Corona Apocalypse, there is, you know, an abundance of lows. I mean, I can't run out of womp womps. I mean, I couldn't run out of womp womps beforehand, but now with Corona Apocalypse, like, there is a womp womp every day because people are doing crazy things. People are doing insane things. The government is doing insane things. And so they're just giving me so much material to work with. It's sad that I even have to have a womp womp section, but I mean, we need to be informed of the craziness that's going on in these streets. So this week's womp womp of the week is kind of twofold. It definitely goes out to the international community, particularly that of the Chinese persuasion and the French persuasion. And our first womp womp goes to two French doctors who recently proposed to test COVID-19 treatment on Africa. And this was taken from a CNN article and also from a BBC article that was recently posted with regards to these two French doctors. Now, what's interesting to me is that the continent of Africa, so not, you know, people think that Africa is a country. It's not a country, but the continent of Africa is the least affected. And yet, there is a proposal by these European doctors, French doctors, France, in which is very high on the coronavirus spreading list. They proposed that the COVID-19 treatment be tested out essentially on the citizens of Africa, right? And so this proposal sent the Black community in a frenzy, forcing African leaders, celebrities, and basically anybody who was Black that had a voice to denounce the French and their suggestion to conduct clinical trials in Africa, stating that Africans are not guinea pigs and that Africa is not a testing lab. Now, I can say that this is baffling because it sounds crazy, right? Considering the rampant, spread of this virus in France and in Europe in as a whole, like we all know what's happening in Italy. So to say that I'm shocked that this proposal was made, I'm not shocked. Why? Because the world is obsessed with Africa. They're obsessed with Black people, and they have always used us. You know, whether we were in Africa or in the United States, they've always used Black people as guinea pigs. Again, even here in the United States, if you have, you know, if you've done any type of studies here in the United States, you've heard of the Tuskegee trials, right? On Black men, on the Tuskegee Airmen. And so, you know, in many cases as well, African nations, unfortunately, they've allowed these Europeans, they've allowed these outsiders to come in and conduct clinical trials on their people for mere pennies or for nothing at all. So although I am very happy that, you know, the Black community, the African leaders are standing up for themselves now and really saying, you know, don't mess with us, you know, do not have the audacity to come and, you know, even suggest that you are going to use our people as guinea pigs for your coronavirus 19, you know, testing. But, you know, ultimately, if you really think about it, though, the French doctors, although the French are very audacious, I feel like they wouldn't feel so comfortable to publicly make such a suggestion or proposal unless, you know, history hasn't been on their side to show that Africa has always been accepting of this type of exploitation by the global community. So although I give the French doctors the womp womp of the week for coming out of their faces and having Mother Africa on their tongue when it comes to these trials, particularly when it doesn't make sense, right? There are not crazy cases in Africa the way there are in Europe and in the United States. If I were them, I would propose to do a clinical trial in the US or in Italy, somewhere where, you know, it's really going on crazy and the spread is getting out of control. That's what I would suggest. But we also have to kind of see where the responsibility is or where the blame can be on, you know, our people. I know some people might not believe, you know, accept this point of view and they might reject it. But, you know, I've studied bioethics and I've studied, clinical trials and things of that nature, and how a lot of times the third world countries, the poor countries, quote unquote, are the ones who are being exploited because the government is not really standing up and saying, hey, don't come in and exploit our people. Don't come in and test your drugs on our people. The government, a lot of times, will receive some sort of kickback or some sort of, you know, aid or money, you know, in exchange for these clinical trials. And this has been, you know, this is something you guys can Google. I'm not making this stuff up. So I think that, yes, although people are standing up now, because I think it's still outrageous that with the facts and the data that's in front of us of who, you know, of where the large populations, the concentrations of this, you know, virus slash disease is, that they would prey on Mother Africa, that, you know, is the least affected continent, is a bit crazy. But I think we do have to take a look and see, you know, why is it that, you know, we are always the first to be, you know, the guinea pigs? Because I think that history would suggest that a lot of times we've allowed ourselves to be exploited. So I'm really hoping that this conversation with respect to Africa being a testing lab gets shifted and gets pushed off. Hopefully, you know, some common sense will sink in and they will maybe do these clinical trials in Italy. You know, somewhere where there's high concentrations of this stuff, the United States. But that was my, you know, first womp womp of this week. Again, just the audacity sometimes, really, it's mind boggling, but it's not mind boggling. The second womp womp of the week goes to the People's Republic of China. Actually, I don't know if they call it the People's Republic of China anymore, but China. So the Chinese are back in the news for discriminating against Africans and U.S. African Americans. They wanted to make that distinction. This is according to the Associated Press. They had an article that recently came out with respect to the discrimination that essentially Black people, you know, we can call them Africans and we can say U.S. based African Americans. We can, you know, distinguish it like that. But essentially Black people are being discriminated in the city of Guangzhou, China. And in the city of Guangzhou, China, they have been seeing an increased number of coronavirus, coronavirus infected people. The virus essentially is spreading more rapidly in this particular city of China. And the Chinese are claiming that it is due to the overseers, right? To the African nationals and to the to the African Americans from the United States who've been traveling to this particular city, and they are claiming that they are the ones who have brought this disease into their beloved city. And so what are they doing about this? Well, they're doing what they do best. They are discriminating against the Black people. So according to the Associated Press, some Africans in the commercial hub have been reported being evicted or discriminated against amid coronavirus fears. And a U.S. embassy security alert on Saturday said that police ordered bars and restaurants not to serve clients who appeared to be of African origin. And local officials have launched mandatory testing and self-quarantining for anyone with African contacts. Now, I just find this to be very interesting, right? I mean, we all know that the coronavirus came from the Wuhan Chinese markets in China. So the fact that it's spreading, is still spreading in China, I mean, I don't know. I haven't done any actual studies there. Maybe it could be from individuals traveling from abroad. You know, maybe they are the ones that are bringing in the virus. I don't know. But I mean, this is a city in China that has the coronavirus, a city in China. I don't know how far it is from Wuhan, you know, from Wuhan, but I'm just baffled at the fact that the Chinese, who have suffered great discrimination themselves from the entire world, how they are now have the audacity to have, you know, such, you know, to be so discriminatory against these African Americans and Africans, essentially Black people, and treating them with such, you know, horrible, you know, conditions. And so I know I had seen some recent videos on social media with, I think it was, I don't know if it was the prime minister or the diplomat from Nigeria, who was having a conversation with the leader in Beijing, and basically, you know, G-checking him like, yo, when the world turned their backs on you, when the world, you know, was closing their borders to you, we still allowed our people to be within your borders. We did not do the mass exodus of our African people back to Africa. We continue to support you. We continue to stand by you through all of this. And now you have the audacity to treat our African nationals with such disrespect and to accuse them of being the spreaders of this coronavirus that originated in China doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense at all. But that's what's happening in these streets, people. That is what's happening in these streets. Ah, there we go. The Speaker of the Nigeria's House of Representatives. He is the one, I believe, that was having the conversation with the leader of Beijing. So, I mean, there is a lot of discrimination going on in these streets in general against Chinese people. But now we have the Chinese people discriminating against Black people. I guess it's that thing where when you're low on the totem pole or when you are the one at the bottom of the barrel, you are always seeking to uplift yourself by pulling somebody else down, right? So I guess that's maybe what's happening in Guangzhou, China. But either way, they get the womp womp of the week, because I feel like with everything that they have gone through, to still have these countries, particularly these African countries, Kenya, Nigeria, that stood by them, that supported them, for now, Guangzhou, China, for China to now turn their backs and mistreat them, it's ridiculous. It's unreal. But those are our womp womps of the week, our international womp womps of the week. So now we are on to the meat of the show. All right, everyone. I'm here with my very special guest, Nurse T. Nurse T, say hello.
Hi.
So I first wanted to say thank you for taking the time to be part of this show. I know as a nurse, you are probably very, very exhausted, overworked with everything that's going on right now. So I really, really appreciate you taking the time to just share some knowledge about what is going on during this corona apocalypse, as I like to call it.
Yes, thank you for the platform also just to speak my truth.
Yes, thank you. So, Nurse T, just if you could just let us know, how long have you been a nurse?
So I've been a nurse for 7 years now.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know it was that long. You're seasoned in the game.
Too seasoned.
And what I guess drew you to nursing? Was it, you know, I know a lot of times children go into nursing because their parents want them to do it, but what was your motivation to becoming a nurse?
I guess for me, I had some experience in the business world from like high school and freshman year in college. And I just didn't like the atmosphere. And I thought nursing would just be a great way for me to be involved in service as a profession. And I had also, I have family members who are already in the field. So it was kind of, you know, that was the next option or the next thought career-wise that, you know, I could do. And I started doing it and I was actually doing really well. So that built up my confidence. And I was like, you know what, I can do this. You know, this is something that I can flourish in.
Okay, great. So for the longest time, I mean, I grew up in a family where, you know, pretty much almost everyone's in the medical field. You know, my mom's a nurse. I have a lot of family members that are nurses. So I grew up going to work with my mom. So I'm very familiar with like the hospital settings and what tends to happen. And I've asked a couple of nurses mm-hmm. this question before, but in your entire nursing experience, have you ever experienced anything like what's going on right now with this coronavirus?
No one has ever experienced anything like this before. Even I've spoken to nurses who have 30 years over me, and this is a first of, you know, of its kind. I mean, we have every year we'll have like a little flu epidemic that with a lot of cases, but, you know, flu and COVID are so different. Even when Ebola was around and they had the SARS outbreak, that still wasn't really as big as it is as COVID is right now in New York, in the US. Those were kind of isolated cases. So, you know, this is something I never thought I would see in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. This is like some Florence Nightingale apocalypse event. Like, yeah, this is unprecedented for nursing, I think.
Yeah.
In my 7 years, in the last 30 years from nurses I've spoken to.
Yeah. I know in the beginning, I heard a lot of people liken the coronavirus to the flu, to, you know, again, the SARS outbreak, the Ebola. But as the days are going, you know, by, I think it's very clear to everyone that this is nothing like the flu, nothing like the SARS outbreak, nothing like Ebola. And it's definitely something that's, in a sense, starting to cripple the healthcare system.
I think the healthcare system is already crippled just from just being in it every day. I think if nothing positive comes up, then that would be a changes in American healthcare. That would be a shame. I think this should be what drives change in hospitals, what drives change in people who have access to care, the disparities in our community. Hispanics and Blacks are being the most infected based on statistics I saw by de Blasio.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's a lot of conversations that have to be had, you know, when this is over, and a lot of changes that should be made in the system and when this is all over.
I definitely agree with you there. I know that I've heard many say that, you know, there were, like you said, already issues with the healthcare system. There were already weaknesses, but that this coronavirus pandemic has definitely exposed, you know, all of the weaknesses, if not, you know, weaknesses that we probably didn't even know existed. It definitely cast a serious spotlight on the American healthcare system. And I agree with what you said. Like, if we don't change the healthcare system after this, or at least go back to the drawing board and reevaluate, then I think we definitely are doomed.
Yeah. People will continue to die if something like this happens and there's not proper policies, proper guidelines in place. You know, if this happens again, it will be much worse, I think, if we're not prepared.
Mm-hmm. So now, as a nurse that's on the front line, because that's a phrase that we are seeing all over the place now, frontline workers, nurses on the front line. Because that's essentially what you guys are. You guys are, you know, the first responders, the individuals who are actually making contact with patients on a daily basis. So explain to me, I guess, as being, you know, a person of color, a young woman of color, a nurse who is, you know, in her career, you know, in a career that she's passionate about, you know, what are the feelings that and the thoughts that are going through your mind every day as you get ready for work, knowing firsthand how crazy this disease is and, you know, listening to the news and having to see all of these fatalities, you know, what's going through your mind when you have to, you know, leave your house, get ready to go to work every day?
I think, I know for me and a lot of people I've spoken to, every day you go into work, you feel like your life is on the line. Not only yourself, but your family members. If you live at home, if you have children, if you, you know, are not in an apartment by yourself, but you cohabitate with other people, you know, you feel like not only are you risking your life, but then you might bring home this virus to your family members mm-hmm. who didn't ask for this. So you're not only worried about yourself, you're worried about your family. You're anxious now about what you're walking into, because every day it's something new. The rules are constantly changing. So you might come walk in and you might have a manageable, you know, patient load, or you walk in and after you're done, you're 14 hours. You're like, what the hell did I just live through? Or what the hell just happened? Like, there is no real time to process the things that you're doing at work while you're doing it. You're kind of just on a constant go. You know, you're not using the bathroom adequately enough, because how are you, you know, you're in the mask for 12 hours, so you're not really taking it off. You're not taking it off. You're in the mask, you know, all day or night, so you might not be adequately hydrating yourself. You know, you're not taking a proper break, you know, because you're so busy, because the patient load might have went from 1-to-1 per the CDC guidelines. But as we continue to test, as more people continue to be admitted into the hospital, be it advanced ICU care where I currently work, your ratio went from a 1-to-1 or a 1-to-2 to now a 1-to-4. Wow. Your beds are being filled constantly. So the workload is way, way more heavy than it's ever been. I've never worked like this before, you know, as a nurse. Even on my worst night, I think the nights that I've been having have topped that and then some. So mentally, you're anxious, you're fearful, you're worried, and then you're so focused on what you're doing that you don't always get to process what just happened to you and what you just experienced. Mm-hmm. So it's mentally, it's exhausting, you know, it's definitely exhausting.
Okay. Now, we've been seeing, you know, healthcare workers, nurses and doctors all over the country dropping like flies. And so, you know, with you working in a New York City hospital where, you know, we are the epicenter of this coronavirus situation, we're hearing the nurses, doctors dropping like flies. You know, we're hearing that, you know, more and more nurses are calling out sick because they're either testing positive or they're showing symptoms. And a lot of people are saying that this is because of the lack of PPE, which everybody knows what PPE is now, personal protective equipment. And that hospitals, you know, some hospitals are being forced to give nurses one mask for a day. And this is not even, you know, talking about the shield. So I guess with your experience being on the floor, have you had colleagues that have, you know, fell ill to the coronavirus, who have tested positive? And if so, like, how has the environment been with now the fact that there are individuals who are healthcare providers falling ill to the disease?
I definitely have had colleagues tested positive for the virus. I've also had friends from other institutions tested positive for the virus. It's not only nurses or doctors, it's the respiratory therapists. It's the person, you know, it's the person who comes and cleans the rooms, you know, healthcare. There's so many different roles and everyone is exposed. It's the person who transport patients from floor to floor. So, you know, everyone is exposed to this, especially because we were so late in our interventions and protecting staff. So people were exposed before we knew properly how to handle corona, right? Mm-hmm. Before we were being properly given an N95 mask to wear. So as far as, yes, I am seeing my colleagues test positive. Morale goes down when you were working with someone yesterday and you come back in and you hear they're out. You know, it makes you think and wonder, am I next? Because they're doing the same thing I'm doing. They're wearing the same mask, the same gloves, the same gown, the same face shield, and it's not enough. You know, I look at other countries and their PPE is way more advanced than what I am receiving at work. Mm-hmm. And if my coworkers are being sick with what they're wearing, then yeah, I am fearful that I'm next. And I don't, you know, you see the reality of what corona does to patients, and you see what the end result is, and you think about yourself, and you know, you don't want to be like your patient, right? That's your worst fear. Mm-hmm. So of course it is a worrisome. You come into work every day and you're just praying to God that I make it out of this. Like, I am doing my job. I'm doing my, you know, what I signed up for. Yes, I am a nurse. I'm happy to be a nurse. However, I want to be a nurse that's protected. I didn't sign up not to have access to proper tools.
Yeah.
And I think that's just part of the bigger issue. We want to do our jobs. We're happy to help heal people, make them better. But we want to be protected properly. And for a pandemic like this and a disease that's, you know, a virus that will take you out, it doesn't matter your age, your race, you know, your wealth. You know, you can be 18 year old and have corona, you don't know what your outcome is. So proper equipment is how we, you know, protect ourselves. And unfortunately, the level of equipment that we're getting and the availability of equipment that's, you know, PPE that's there for us is limited. And for some nurses, they're using garbage bags. And that's, wow, that's really sad when you're in the richest country, mm-hmm. supposed to be one of the richest countries, and this is what we're receiving. And I see other countries who are not as advanced as us, and their PPE is way better than mine.
Yeah,
so
they're in like full astronaut, yes, gear, literally full astronaut,
yeah,
gear.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to wear. I watched the news, and the news reporter's PPE is better than mine. Mm. And I don't know how that makes sense. How does that make sense? He's, yeah, not actively involved with treating patients. He's not exposed to corona. He's just speaking to someone in an isolated area who has a mask on, but he's in a full-on suit, full face shield, great N95, and I'm just in a gown.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is some, and that's something I think has to be addressed. You know, and you have to protect your workers, because when all nurses, you know, can't do this anymore, who is going to take care of you? If we're not protected, who's taking care of you?
Yeah.
And I think that should say something. So,
and I'm glad that you harped on that. Like, you know, if all the nurses are, you know, sick, if they're being taken out by this virus, who is going to assist? And I think over the course of the last couple of weeks, I've seen a lot of posts go viral on social media with nurses who were just like, I quit. I showed up to work. They sent me to work on a COVID floor with no mask. And so I quit. And, you know, I've seen other posts where nurses themselves were in hospital beds, you know, because they contracted the virus, and they were themselves saying that, you know, we don't get any PPE. We don't have anything to help us fight this. And now we're in the hospital beds, and we're not getting treated, you know, fairly. People are afraid. People, you know, they have families and they don't want to contract this. So there's, even within that, like, self-preservation, there's been some mixed reviews, mixed commentary on some of these viral posts with these nurses who have gone on and said, I quit. because I'm not protected. So in terms of that, like as a nurse who either yourself or you've seen other nurses not receive enough protective gear to do their job, what is your take on, I guess, some of these nurses who have come online to talk about the conditions and why they quit?
I think until you've lived this, until you've walked in my shoe and don't do what I am doing, you don't have the right to criticize my position, you know, personal position, I think, as far as in the sense from coming from those nurses' perspective, you don't know, you know, what they were going through specifically. I think everyone has the right to self-preservation, to whatever that means. Why should I put myself, my life at risk to do a job where I'm not being given the appropriate tools, right? Why am I going to put myself in the position where I'm going to be the next patient in the, beside that one? I don't think anyone should disagree with that. I mean, would you go, you know, do your job not appropriately? If you were a police officer, are you going to go out and not have, you know, your gun to protect you, you know, for something like that, you know, for just an example?
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone has the right to criticize those nurses. We don't know, you know, if you're immunocompromised and you're working as a nurse, you know, everyone has a different situation. I'm not going to do a job without the right equipment. And if I work, and I currently am working on a floor where there's all COVID patients, and if I do not get a N95 mask, if I don't get a gown, if I don't get a face shield and gloves, I will not be walking into the room to take care of those patients. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
I'm putting my life at jeopardy. It makes no sense for me to do that. I'm not going to. How am I helping them? By the time I leave, they're going to have one nurse less the next day, like, and then all nurses are going to be dropping like flies. So there will be no staff. So there has to be standards. We have to uphold standards for ourselves, personal and professional. I don't see how that should go out the window. I don't understand the criticism there. If that person can afford, and if they're okay with not having a job, then that's fine. But I would do the same thing in a heartbeat. I would leave my job before I endanger myself and others, because it's not just me, it's the others as well. So I support those nurses in whatever decision that they decide is best for them and their family.
And I totally agree with you there. I definitely saw, you know, some remarks, some ignorant remarks at that, saying, you know, well, this is what you guys signed up for. So, you know, this is what, you know, this is part of the game. But I do agree, especially I know with one of the posts that had gone viral, the nurse had indicated that she was immunocompromised and she had kids, you know, did not have support. So therefore, if she's sick, you know, who would be taking care of her, you know, her kids? Like, forget the fact that she's already immunocompromised. So I totally understood, you know, where she was coming from. And I agree with you. You know, it's so easy for us to sit back and say, well, you know, that's your job anyways, and come up with all of these, you know, discussion topics and criticize, but we're not the ones. I mean, most of us are not even leaving our homes to go to the grocery store. We have them being delivered. So we don't even know what the real reality is.
No one, unless you're living in this and, you know, every day and you're seeing the change from beginning of March to now. I mean, no one, you guys, you know, general population don't have a clue of what's going on in the hospitals, you know, and then there are these cameras and these, you know, articles that are coming out that are great, or, you know, they're showing us a glimpse of what's going on, but those are also not always true reality, you know, at the end of the day. So no one, general population who are staying home, they don't have the right to criticize. They should be supporting us, supporting all healthcare workers at this time. They should be doing their part in stopping the spread of COVID, because, you know, the more we practice social distancing, it's been proven to, of course, you know, slow down the virus, slow down the amount of people getting admitted in the hospital, which is beneficial for us, because we do want to to beat COVID-19. We don't want this pandemic to continue. This is exhausting. I don't want to be doing this for a whole year.
Mm-hmm. No,
you know, I'm already a month. Yeah, and hospitals can't sustain themselves. They can't sustain us. They can't sustain we're running out of medications. We're out of room, you know. So yeah, the public has to do their part, and you know, they don't understand, they don't know. So just do your part of what you can do and what you do know you can do. And healthcare professionals, we're doing our part. We're showing up every day. We're getting COVID-19 and we're going through our quarantine, and we're still coming back to work to help save your grandmother, your sister, mm-hmm. your father, whoever. So there's no need to be critical of us. This is time to support us because we need it.
I totally agree with you there. Now, since the governor of New York instituted the pause, which I think maybe a couple of weeks now since I think March 16th or whenever that he instituted the pause, social distancing. Have you seen, you know, at your particular hospital, or have you heard from others in their hospitals, have you seen a decline of patients being admitted for COVID? Do you think that it actually is working? Okay.
I think it's too soon to tell about social distancing if it's working, because I don't believe New York City has reached its peak yet. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure, but I don't really believe we reached our peak yet. And you know what's great about what the governor has been doing is just increasing the amount of testing to isolate those cases. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just really shed a light on how many people are infected. And I think that has been helping a lot, you know, with quarantine and so forth. But for me, being at the front line, I'm still getting caseloads of patients. Patients are still being admitted. I know I have friends working in Queens and their hospital system is overwhelmed there. So I don't think we've really seen, think it's too early to tell if, you know, the rate of admittance in New York, if that's been declining. And I don't know what the latest statistics is with the amount of new cases, you know, that have been reported. But as far as being on the front lines, there is no change.
No decline as of yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
but just because, I just want to say, just because we don't see the results of social distancing so up close and, you know, so like a drastic change in numbers, mm-hmm. doesn't mean that social distance is not working.
Yeah.
But because our response to this virus was so late in the game, I believe that's why, you know, and because we're rapidly testing, that is why our numbers continue, of course, to increase. But just because you don't see the results of social distance doesn't mean it's not working. It just means that we are just in the early phases or mid phases of, you know, all the protocols that have been in place. So I think it's important that people continue to practice social distancing, wearing a mask. That's the new recommendation with CDC. If you're going outside, wear a mask, a cloth like mask. So I think, you know, we should continue doing our part. Absolutely.
Okay. Now, the other thing that I wanted to kind of ask, I guess, with respect to some of the recommendations we've been hearing from healthcare providers, urgent cares, is that, you know, the initial feeling or desire to run to the emergency room if you are, you know, starting to feel some of these, I guess, milder COVID symptoms, the recommendation is to stay home, treat it with, you know, Tylenol, drink fluids, and only come to the emergency room if you start experiencing, you know, serious shortness of breath, etc. Is that on par with what the messaging that, you know, is that you've at least heard with respect to, you know, individuals who are getting certain symptoms?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think those recommendations are still in. I'm not quite sure, but I think hospitals were just getting bombarded in the ER with so many people coming in whose symptoms weren't, you know, as extreme, or mm-hmm. whose symptoms could be managed at home, I should say, mm-hmm. whose symptoms could be managed at home. So I think that's why those recommendations were made. I think I don't really know how to properly say, because I just feel like from what I've seen, of course, COVID presents with those, you know, typical symptoms that, yes, you can manage at home. But when you do get to that point, like they're saying, when you are having the shortness of breath and, you know, you feel like you need to be admitted, of course, come to hospital. But, you know, the disease, the virus is not fully understanding, and people, when they do come to the hospital, sometimes are coming in kind of too late. But like I said, I don't really feel like I can really comment on that, because yes, I do agree with the recommendations, but you as a person know yourself. Yeah. And if, you know, if you feel like you cannot manage your symptoms at home, then of course seek medical attention. And there's also the other part of it where people are really afraid and they get that, you know, 101 fever, and of course they panic and they go to the hospital, and they might have gone to the hospital too early and they get sent home. And now when they're really probably experiencing like full on, symptomatic events, then they're like, they were told they should stay home, so then they don't come in and then something happens. So you just have to know yourself. And yes, if your symptoms are manageable, stay home, because that is the recommendation. And if you are having the symptoms of shortness of breath, then of course, you know, seek medical attention. Absolutely. If you are coming into any public areas and you do know that you're symptomatic for, you know, COVID, you just haven't had a proper, a test yet, at least wear a mask, mm-hmm. you know. We're covered, you know. Think about the fact that if you're coming in to an urgent care, and, you know, do your part not to infect people, mm-hmm. you know, if you're coughing, you know, you just think about those things too. Like you do want to seek medical attention, but you don't want to infect people. So wear a mask, do your part as well.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I mean, I think I wouldn't have said it better than that. You know yourself, like you said, understand your body. Although there are these recommendations that are encouraging people to stay home, you know, if their symptoms are manageable. But like you said, if you get to a point where you feel like they're not manageable, not to wait. Because I've been seeing a lot of recent reports of people going into the ER when it was too late. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, expiring. So I feel like mm-hmm. knowing yourself and really being in tune and advocating for yourself, especially during a time like this, where it might be so easy for a healthcare provider or urgent care to say, no, just stay home. It's not serious enough. But if you are in tune with your body and in tune with yourself, being your own advocate, I think it's very important around this time too.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had a coworker who tested positive and couldn't even get a test and couldn't even get a chest X-ray. Mm-hmm. And they really had to, you know, seek and go above and beyond to make sure that they got tested and get a chest X-ray. So you do have to do your part and just be vigilant in your own care and advocate for yourself, because the system is, you know, strained, and there are not enough providers, there are not enough workers, and, you know, there might not be a X-ray tech available to take your X-ray, but that doesn't mean you should, you know, mm-hmm. give up. I guess you should, you know, seek out other ways to get treatment. I had another coworker. I had a friend who, you know, tested positive, wasn't being admitted to their local hospital and had to seek care somewhere else at another hospital, and luckily enough she was able to get care because she had pneumonia. And if she had just gone home and tried to medicate herself and do it on herself, she could have died of pneumonia. So yeah. you do, like, you know, like we've been saying, you have to know your body and just do your part as much as you can. As well as, you know, it is frustrating to be a patient, especially during a time like this when the system is strained and there's just not proper availability of staff, of, you know, medications, or just, you know, just attention that you feel that you need because you're so sick and, you know, you can't breathe and there's like might not be someone there with you right then and then. So, yeah, you just, it's, it's very frustrating, but you just have to do your part.
No, I totally understand. And so during this time, obviously, of crisis and a shortage of nurses, there is a heightened need for nurses. And so we're seeing all of these efforts to recruit nurses from not just all over the country, but all over the world, medical professionals from all over the world. And as of lately, I've actually seen some ads for, you know, nurses, and where New York is seeking nurse professionals. They're trying to get people out of retirement. I know my mom, they tried to get her out of retirement. My mom is like an elderly person. She's just like, are you kidding me? But mm-hmm. I've seen ads offering upwards to $10,000 a week, travel expenses paid, amenities paid, everything paid, just to come and help with this fight against COVID-19. I guess my question, though, is I understand this large amount of money that's being offered to, you know, outside nurses, but has there been any offer of either bonuses or increased pay, hazard pay, for the nurses who are currently working in the New York City systems?
So where I work, we have a union, and we mm-hmm. our union has been advocating for us to get some type of hazard pay mm-hmm. because, of course, we're seeing other nurses from agency do the same thing we do mm-hmm. under the same circumstances with the same amount of supplies, and they're making, you know, more money than us. And it's just become a principle now. It's the fact that if I am putting my life on the line, you know, I should be compensated appropriately. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not so much that we're being money hungry. I think we just feel it should be a principal thing. It should just be a standard thing that, yes, the conditions are horrific, so we should be compensated for, you know, the conditions that we're working in. And my union is currently, you know, trying to get us hazard pay. So I think that's just hasn't been, I think they're still in talks about that. Mm-hmm. But I do know Mount Sinai Hospital did reach an agreement with, you know, their union. I do know other hospitals aren't doing any type of hazardous pay. And so I think the fact that I'm in a union has been, you know, helpful towards that. But I do believe that nurses, doctors, respiratory therapists, whatever, you know, everyone on the front line needs to be compensated. Delivery workers, you know, every single essential worker right now should be compensated for the risks that we're, you know, that we're seeing mm-hmm. and the danger that we're in with the job that we're doing. I think we deserve that and then some. So yeah.
Yeah.
As far as the gap, I think the gap is, it just shows that especially offering $10,000 for these nurses to come in, it just shows that we are valuable mm-hmm. and that should show our institution and let our institutions know that we should be compensated. Because if a private company or an agency is willing to pay, and which means that you're willing to pay that much money because you're working through the agency, these mm-hmm. institutions, that means you should give your, you know, floor nurse, your regular employees the right pay, because you're already willing to pay that amount. Mm-hmm. So I don't see, it should be a no-brainer in my opinion.
I definitely agree with you, because I remember when I saw the first time I saw that post, I was like, what a time to be a nurse. Like $10,000 a week and you're getting everything paid for, which means you're essentially pocketing it. And I kind of felt bad for some of my nurses who I know for a fact aren't getting any type of hazard pay or increase, and they're literally risking their lives every day as well, like you said, doing the same kind of work.
And the hazard pay that we will get compared to what those nurses are getting will not be anywhere close, you know, not even a fraction of, you know, what we will make compared to them. They'll still be in a better position mm-hmm. with, as far as, you know, the amount that they're making. And to speak on nurses who, you know, were asked to come to the front line, I completely understand. You know, if you haven't practiced in 10 years or however many years, and, you know, to be thrown in this environment, I can understand why, you know, it's not appealing. It's not about the money,
yeah.
You know. everyone's life is priceless, and that's what this feels like. This is not a situation where, you know, and I'm speaking for myself, for some people the money might be attractive. But coming from what I've experienced and from my perspective, you know, I feel my life is priceless, so I would not be interested in a 10K payout. You know, if I can go with the other option, which is to not, you know, have to face this, or so it's not, you know, the money is doesn't really heal the wound, I guess. It doesn't make anything look any prettier in my perspective. It doesn't make this experience, you know, it's just a compensation, I guess. I don't know.
I totally understand. I mean, can you imagine, like I said, my mom's been a nurse for a while, but you know, she had switched from hospital nursing to kind of like patient care, you know, at home patient care. Over the course of the last several years. I don't remember the last time my mother worked on a floor. So for her now to be an elderly person being asked to come in and, you know, deal with machines and all this stuff that she hasn't been used to for years, you know, in a sense it's a bit much to, you know, to make that request. Now, if you are comfortable with it, that's on you. But I also don't think that we should look down on nurses or medical professionals who say, you know what, I got to sit this one out.
Right, exactly. And, you know, there is, like, what training are we giving these people? And who has time for training? I think you're just kind of being thrown in. You're not, you know, there's no real training. You're just being thrown in and told to, like, figure it out. So, I mean, that you're jeopardizing, you know, yourself, because you can hurt yourself by not doing what you're properly doing. And then you can hurt a patient by not knowing what you're properly doing. So, I mean, I am grateful for the nurses who are coming forward and coming from other states, nurses who are, you know, answering the call to help, all healthcare professionals, I should say, who are answering the call to help, all the doctors, all the therapists. We are so thankful for them, and because it is a big sacrifice, and, you know, it is appreciated, and it's making a difference. It's adding, you know, staff. It's helping with quality of care. So, you know, we are appreciative. But if you decide to sit this one out, no one should be judged for that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Oh, man. So this was definitely, I think, a very insightful conversation with somebody who's actually on the front lines. You know, it's so easy to kind of feel like you know what's going on by watching social media and reading the news. But, you know, it's really helpful to actually sit down with somebody who's fighting this thing each and every day. In a place like New York City, you know, especially, which is the epicenter of this virus, it definitely gives us some perspective as to the work that you guys are doing in fear, really, right? You guys are anxiously doing this job. It's not like you're kind of like excited.
No. So you try to come in and have some positivity. You try to kind of create a decent mood. You don't want to always be, you know, so strung up. You try to keep yourself calm, and you support your coworkers who might, you know, there's a lot of teamwork happening right now because we can't do this alone. So we're relying on each other, and, you know, there's been a lot of support from the public, and, you know, we say keep that coming because we need it from people who, you know, choose to donate, whether food or supplies or prayers and, you know, the clap. It's whatever you've chosen to do, it's appreciated and it's well received, and we are so grateful. So it's these are trying times, and you know we're all humans. We're nurses. They're calling us heroes, but, you know, heroes are people, and heroes go through things, and this is a mental game, and, you know, we're trying to keep ourselves afloat, definitely.
Well, I know I definitely appreciate all that you guys do. And it's not because, you know, I come from a long line of medical professionals, but it's because right now to have to be like, I mean, again, most of us are not even leaving the four corners of our home, like to even throw out the trash. Like, we're just afraid to even breathe the air. So the fact that, you know, you are making the conscious decision to go into work every day and to save lives of, my relatives, saving the lives of my friends, saving the lives of just people that you don't even know. I think it's very, it's commendable. And I always say, like, it's the work of saints.
Thank you so much for your kind words. Yeah, definitely. And I'm glad that the public is appreciating us and realizing at the end of the day, who holds up this country? It's not, you know, it's the people who you would never, would have thought, you know, is keeping us afloat right now. So, yeah, shout out to all the essential workers right now doing the damn thing. Definitely. We appreciate you. We thank you.
So what are some last words would you have for the people who are listening in to this show, who, you know, they've listened in, they've heard everything that we've had to say so far. What are some parting words that you would have for them?
I just want to say continue social distancing. I know the weather has been getting better, but doesn't mean that you need to be outside with all three of your friends, you know, in a group. This is not the time to be idle. It's time to care not only about, you know, yourself, but also your family. We're all living on top of each other in New York. And, you know, you as an 18-year-old, 16-year-old, 13-year-old, if you contract the virus, you can give it to your parents. And, you know, I'm seeing 30-year-olds die. I'm seeing 58-year-olds die with three children. So, you know, this thing is killing us, and we all have to do our part to stop the transfer of this virus. And that means staying home and, you know, being aware of your distance with others and practicing proper hand hygiene, you know, staying clean. These simple steps, wearing a mask, if you have one, you know, or making one, there are YouTube tutorials. So these simple things haven't changed. The recommendations haven't changed, and just follow them. Simple, protect yourself and protect your family, because no one wants to be in the position where, and I've experienced this, where I'm speaking to a young 20-year-old looking through the window to see their, you know, their parent in the bed who has coded four times. So, wow. And they're begging me, you know, what else can they do? You know, they're offering money, and there's nothing else that could have been done, you know, when you've exhausted all efforts, you know. Mm-hmm. So just know that this thing is real. It's killing people, and it's killing young people. So, you know, just do your part. And of course, use this time to, you know, find a new hobby. You know, you don't need to be bored. Just find something to do. You don't have to watch Netflix, but take care of yourself. You know, use this time to be, you know, work out, whatever it is, but practice, you know, what everyone's been preaching to slow this virus and to end this pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing more to add to that. I think you just said everything. You know, stay your asses at home.
Stay home, 'cause I can't stay home. I want to stay home, but I can't.
Yeah, exactly. You know, stay home for the nurses who can't stay home. You know, let's, you know, each one teach one, each one help one, you know, each other out. So
exactly.
All right, Nurse T, well, thank you again so much for making the time. Again, I know you are a nurse, you are, you know, exhausted from everything, but you still took the time to, you know, to be on the show and to share your personal experiences and to shed some light as to what's the realities that are, you know, that our nurses and other healthcare professionals are facing day in and day out. So, you know, definitely appreciate you making the time for us.
Thank you, Rita.
You're welcome. And with that being said, everyone, it's a wrap.
You were listening to According to RP on WJM. Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.
WJMSradio.com.
Download the new app.
Live 365. Listen to the show anywhere.
Anytime.
Download it now.
Thank